Welcome to our morning show from WRCO. Today, we are pleased to have in the studio District Administrator Lauren Glassbrenner from River Valley Schools. How you doing there, Lauren?
I'm good, Phil. Good. How are you? It's great to see you on this sunny morning. We're finally into spring.
Good to be seen, and it's nice that it's sunny, and it's Eclipse Monday, so I'm guessing some of your teachers, some of your classrooms are going to be doing some special things.
There's going to be a lot of kids that are really interested in astrology today, right? You know, it's going to be really fun for them to really get out there and find what that's happening in the sky. It's going to be dark in the middle of the day, and I think that brings on a lot of interest and engagement for kids. So we're excited about that today at the schools. I'm sure they'll do it very safely, but it'll be something fun for us to see. We know that we're not in the direct path, but it will be something that I think, because the skies are clear, we'll be able to view.
20 years will be the next one, so you think about that, and people that the, you know, students that aren't even born yet will be seeing the next one then.
Yeah, basically. I can remember as a kid up at Fenimore Elementary, they took us all out into the street. They kind of closed down a street and pulled us out into the front of the Fenimore Elementary School and had us all, you know, looking through the contraptions to make sure our eyes were safe. And I remember thinking, geez, the next time this happens, I'm going to be like 30 years old. I couldn't believe in my little head thinking how that was going to forecast us out. So yeah, for the little people, it'll be a good kind of time placement for them to take place today.
Most definitely. Well, we want to start out talking a little bit about the referendum. It was not passed in the River Valley District.
Correct. And, the referendum results for the River Valley School District for the votes cast and all, we did not pass either question. We had two questions out there. The first question was right around that idea of $19.5 million to really work on capital improvements. Again, those were ideally put together to really transition the fronts of the buildings as well as do a lot of remodeling and renovations within the buildings. And that second question didn't pass either. And that one was for a performing arts center, which would have been located at our high school. But within both of those, we really did some good analysis of those patterns. We received 46% of the vote. So you would say that, yes, we were 46% successful, Phil. So that's a good thing. But you need 50% plus one, and we didn't get there. And so the River Valley School Board will kind of come back together. We'll take a look at that and figure out what we're going to do. The needs that were present are still present, right? And it really gets into that talk or that discussion with the community of making sure they understand what our wants and what our needs. Certainly, you could say that a performing arts center is a want, not a need. If you were talking to a high school kid that's involved in the performing arts and their families, they would say that's a need, not a want. You would look at some people and say, hey, to make sure that every room is accessible for kids with handicap needs, I would say that's a need. But yet, some families would say those are wants. So we've really got to define those things very carefully to make sure that we are communicating that out to our public, and we will discuss about what comes next. There will be next steps, but that's the board's decision, and I work for them, so we'll see what comes.
You were out and about in the public a lot. Yes. What were some of the concerns that you heard from people in the district?
That's a really good question, and I think more than anything, it's excessive cost. It costs a lot to renovate, especially a public building. When you go into renovations, you have to make sure everything comes up to code. So when we take a look at a bathroom, for example, that's in our middle school that was built in 1968, the measurements for like the stools or the measurements for the urinals, and I know this is kind of goofy, but all of that has changed since the 1990s with ADA regulation. So when you do renovate, you have to bring everything up to code, and that's expensive. That's a very expensive thing. A lot of those pipes are in cement underneath the hallway, so you have to pound through, you have to dig up, you have to not just go into the basement and fix a few pipes and push up, you know, some new things. So in a school building or any public building for that matter, it's a large, large project. And so it becomes expensive very quickly. And I think it's cost. I don't think people in the River Valley community don't want to support the kids. I don't think they don't want to support the teachers. They're strapped. Many of them work on a fixed income or live on a fixed income. And I think it was excessive costs. They're worried about their taxes. They know that things continue in our economy to push up, and that what we used to be able to buy for a dollar costs three. So I think it's a personal choice as a family. That's what's great about civic engagement in America. Y'all get to vote, and we listen to our community. We will continue to listen to our community and move ahead. But I truly feel like we had an organized communication plan. I feel like we had community involvement with an advisory task force. I believe we canvassed with me going to meetings as much as possible to make sure they were educated. I truly believe it's more about, like I said before, defining what's a want and what's a need, and then also really making sure that people can afford it. It's excessive cost is something that they're very aware of.
How did it break down in terms of your district and townships and whatnot?
So we did analyze that really carefully, and really the Village of Spring Green has had a pattern of passing referendum, but they're not the only town in my district. We have the Town of Spring Green, the Village of Spring Green. We've got Plain, Bear Creek, Troy, Lone Rock, Buena Vista, Arena. So when you look at all these, we pulled four of those towns, I guess, or villages. We had the Village of Spring Green, the Town of Wyoming, the Town of Black Earth, and the Town of Ithaca all supported the referendum. The others did not support the referendum. And so we lost by slim margins in the township of Spring Green, or we lost by slim margins in the township of Buena Vista. So you always got to get to 50 plus one, and we didn't quite get there. And we understand that. That's the voice of the public, and we'll take that information and move ahead. I will ask for folks to be on the lookout, we really need to survey them again. You know, we did a survey 2 years ago, and in that survey, we got 500 respondents that said, yeah, we'll support a referendum up to a certain amount. And they said, keep it under 20 million. And we had about 64% say that they would support it. And now we have 46% that did support it. So between that 60 and 46 is some communication needs that I have to make sure that I task myself with making sure I clear up. So again, we always just want to make sure that we're getting the information out. And so again, to the folks that are out there, thank you for voting. I think that's really important. I think it's important for our communities to have that civic engagement and to share your voice. But I also get paid to do what's best for the kids of River Valley. And so I will continue to ask the questions about what our wants, what our needs, and how we can move ahead for the best education in rural Wisconsin.
Were the numbers similar to 2022 in the vote then?
No, they weren't. We actually had fewer votes. I take that back. We had more votes in 2024. So we had 3,255 people vote. In 2022, we had fewer votes. We had around 2,400 votes, but we got around 62% of the vote back then. So it has transitioned. Now, that's also apples and oranges. Back in 2022, we were asking for operating costs, an operating referendum, and that's to keep the programming smooth sailing, right? That's to keep the sports going, the activities going, get the classrooms going, keeping everything moving as it is. So in some ways, that's an incredible thing. They support our district in keeping with the status quo back in 2022. When you look at 2024, though, investing for 20 years in capital improvements, where we're going to renovate and remodel, that's where we didn't earn that. So it's a different kind of referendum. I have to say that out loud. But again, that capital referendum this last week did not pass. And 2 years ago for an operating referendum, it did. But I was very clear and transparent with folks that in 2025, we will be asking for operating referendum dollars again. So I just had to make sure that people knew that just because we're coming to referendum this time doesn't mean referendums are going away for River Valley. There are needs out there that we believe are necessary for our kids, and the state doesn't fund education like it used to. So in the last 15 years, you've seen almost every district in the state of Wisconsin have to go to operating referenda. And that's based on the way that they calculate the funding for schools, public schools in Wisconsin. So it's not a River Valley problem. You in Richland Center, if you're listening, you know, you just passed an operating referendum last Tuesday because of your needs. In the area, there were a dozen different school districts that were getting operating referendum dollars in. So it's the way that schools are funded now.
And more to come this year,
yes,
too.
Yes, and more to come, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So you talk about wants and needs, Lauren. At what point are things grandfathered in terms of some of the state regulations on buildings? Or at what point does the state step in and say, you need to make these improvements now?
Yeah, the state really doesn't step in, Phil. They don't come in and say, ooh, there's a bad area, that's a bad area. But when you go to analyze that, which we did in our architectural study, you open up the door to looking at what was and what could be. So if you're going to look at a bathroom, for example, and I keep using those as an example, the state's not going to come in and say that has to be remodeled by such and such a date. They are going to say, if you do remodel it and renovate it, it's got to be brought up to code. And so you have to get rid of the old way of doing it and bring in the new way of remodeling it. So that's where the difference comes in. There's no ADA compliance officer that comes around and tags certain rooms as that one needs it, this one needs it. But they do tag that, hey, if you're going to remodel, you've got to bring everything up to code in this building as you do it.
So more work, more study this
absolutely
year? Maybe more meetings?
There's always more meetings out there, and that's okay. It's okay. And I think, again, to the public, just always know that my door is open, that I'm here for you, that if you guys have questions or concerns about what we're doing in River Valley, that you're always welcome to come in and have a cup of coffee. I'm right there in Spring Green on the campus, and I'd be more than willing to sit down with anybody and go through the results, go through the plans that we had, and to take their feedback. I don't want people to feel like I'm not listening, because we really are. Even though I'm a voter, I'm also, the guy that facilitated this large process. And I want to make sure that people know that we will continue to have this conversation. It isn't going to go away.
Okay. I know you and I are both history guys.
Yes, we are.
And the River Valley District has some great history. And I think recently you were talking about it in the arena area, weren't you?
Yeah. So I was recently invited out to the Arena Historians. And they're a large group of people that meet out in the arena area. They usually meet at Grandma Mary's, so they get to have a great place there, too. But they were always bringing in ideas from the past and looking at how it's transitioned to what we have now. And so the Arena Historians are just an incredible group of people. They were so kind, and they wanted me to come out and talk about the changes in education since the 1960s. And that's really important to the River Valley District, because the River Valley School District did not exist until 1962. So when the district became truly the district that it is, it transitioned a lot of little schools into one bigger district. And so again, it goes back to that idea of common schools. And in a presentation that I gave to them, really common schools were not mandated by the government, except that they had to emphasize the ideas of knowledge, civic engagement, and economic beliefs for school funding. And so reading, writing, arithmetic, right? Those three R's were huge. And I know, like the Yakey School that's down just off of Gotham, there's an example of a school that was put in the neighborhood to make sure that the people in that neighborhood, whether it was farmers or people that were working on the river, had an opportunity for those kids to go to school. Those existed in the River Valley, all over the Sauk, Iowa, and Richland County areas until the 1960s. River Valley's consolidated in 1960, and really 25 districts or more became one. So the River Valley School District was made up of Arena, Bear Valley, Clyde, Coon Rock, Helena, Dixon, Grove, Hogan, and the list goes on of all these little school districts that most of these little buildings are still somewhere out in the woods somewhere, or they've been transitioned into different things like housing. But all of these districts came together in 1962 to become River Valley. So the Arena High School or the Plain High School or the Spring Green High School all became one to become the River Valley School District at that time.
It's such a big district, and I think about all the little one-room schools that I'm aware of that are around here, but that's a big number that all came together.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. As they came together, they brought a lot of land. So again, you've heard me say before, River Valley is land rich. We are a large school district, one of the largest in southern Wisconsin. So if you go from Stevens Point and draw a line and come all the way down to the Illinois border, River Valley is one of the top two in size by acre. We are not in size by student value anymore, right? The number of children coming to the district has gone down incredibly. But it is interesting that I found a stat. When they became a district in 1962, they had 1,100 students. It's interesting now, if you go ahead, now the 60 years, River Valley has 1,100 students. So we are exactly the same size as we were when we became a district in the 1960s. So I find that really interesting.
It is. Yeah.
You know, but all of those little schools came together to become that one district.
But high school is down a little bit then from what it was
it
at
is,
that time.
It is. The high school really had a bubble, Phil, that really happened in the 70s and 80s. There was a large amount of families that were sending kids to school. And you guys know this. It was, you know, every farming community had farms where almost every house had six kids in it, right? You know, there were many children. And now most of those farms have maybe a landowner and there might be one or two children. Really, what we found in the most recent census is most families will have one or two children at that. And many of them are having them later on in life, not in their 20s, but in their 30s or 40s now. So that transition in the population is really what's changed the demographics of rural Wisconsin school districts as well.
Interesting to compare prices of homes and, yeah, and all the bills as you go to the 60s to the present.
Yeah, well, and another interesting thing that I really found fascinating is in Sauk County, the growth of River Valley has happened in Sauk County because Sauk County back in the 60s was around 36,000 and now that's doubled to around 65,000. You look at Iowa County, it's only gone from 19.5 up to 23.7. But if you look at Richland County and the growth of Richland County from 1960, there were 17,600 people. And it's less now. There's only 17,000 people in Richland County. So if part of my district, a large part of my district is in Richland County, that in general has gone down in population. So everybody thinks, oh, there's more people and there's more industry and there's more of everything. That's not true. It simply isn't true. Richland County has gone down in population where the state of Wisconsin has gone up. And a lot of that has happened in suburban areas. We're finding even in other districts, and I'll give an example of La Crosse. La Crosse is shutting down school buildings because nobody lives in La Crosse proper. They're in Holman or Onalaska or West Salem. So we've become a society where there's so many kids in suburbia, but not in urban or in rural. So that transition has really changed the demographics of the rural districts in large.
Lots of folks live in districts like Wanakee, Mount Horeb. You know, I think about those kind of those areas where they work in Madison. Do you have that in the River Valley District too? Or?
Yeah, we've seen Arena, our district that's the most east for the district, and that is gaining in popularity for young families because you might have a mom and a dad that can transfer or travel in out of Sauk County or Iowa County there on the border and get to Dane County and get into the Madison proper area, but they live out in the rural district. You see that more so in Arena than you do in other districts or other towns for us. A few from Lone Rock travel out, obviously, this way towards Richland County, and Plain, there's a lot of industry right there in Plain with the Kramer Company, but there's all a lot that go north to Sauk. So it is, you know, rightfully so, with it being four smaller towns, we've become bedroom communities, you know, to the extent that we are. So it's been really interesting. I did an analysis of the courses that were at the high school too. That was something I've really found interesting. In the 1960s, these were the major classes that you could take at River Valley High School. You could take ag or art, business ed, driver's ed, English, German, home ec, industrial arts, math, music, phi ed, science, and the social sciences. And when you go to now what we offer at the high school, it's almost the exact same. We've got ag and art, business and English, math, music, physical education and health. Health is a mandate that was thrown in there. Science, social sciences, technology education, and then now it's world languages. German's not so popular. Now Spanish is more popular. And then we have other courses coming in, such as digital media, mentoring, service learning, youth apprenticeship, college strategies. A lot of things have transitioned because of technology as it's been brought into our schools.
Right. That's probably one of the biggest things is youth apprenticeship and things like that that
Absolutely.
Has changed in that work to school thing that you do as well, or youth school to work, I guess.
Yes, very true. And we want to make sure that every kid's leaving River Valley so that they're ready to go to college if they wish, or go to community and get a career if they wish. So there's kids that diverge off to different paths, and we want to make sure they're ready for all of them. So really, their freshman, sophomore, and junior years are plugged full of essentials that we really want them to try, and then the electives kind of fold in so that they're electing to get into some areas that they're really interested in. And so a district like River Valley has to offer great things for kids that are going to go in to be, let's say, a physician. So I've got to make sure that I'm offering AP biology, but yet I've got to also make sure that I still am offering, you know, TIG welding so that that kid can get out there and be ready to get into work for Rockwell. So there's a lot of different ways and paths and avenues that a kid can take.
Lots of inventions since then. You talk about just in our time how computers have come to play and everything that goes along with that now.
Yeah, I think back to the 60s. And I mean, in our living room, we had an 8-track player that was there with the turntable and all the different things that were there. And then we got the magical Walkman that came out in the 80s. And now everything's run off your phone, right? I can remember in my high school days hearing about the first computers coming into the building, and we were excited when the first computers came in at college, and now every child carries a computer. But that changes the way that a school functions, right? Grades aren't done in a red grade book anymore by Mrs. Simic. They're done online so that parents can see them. They're in a portal, so to speak, so that all that electronic work is done, and it's very readily accessible to every family. So everything has transitioned based on technology, and those changes, I think, are some of the things that people still grasp as, well, that's definitely you want to make that change. Actually, technology is a need now. I can't prepare a kid for a career without the need of making sure I provide that. Even in an ag course, like agriculture, they're using GPS systems in agriculture to make sure that they're using the right crop rotation or they're getting the right density into their seeds. And that requires a tremendous amount of training for the teacher and the kids in technology, and that's stuff that has just transitioned. Some of the inventions just within the last 10 years, when you think of social media, GPS, Google, social media, laptops, desktop computers, cellular reception, all of those things have transitioned all of our schools, but also our homes. So yeah, it's a very different world in education, and it's fun to be a part of it, but it's also, it's amazing to be a part of it at the same time to try to keep up.
Indeed. You know, I'm a history guy, but, you know, you talk about going back in time, you know, there are advantages both ways. But, you know, you talk about all the technology we have now and, mm-hmm. you know, medicine is better and things like that. You know, I think that we're better off in a lot of ways. And I think as teachers, the big thing is trying to get kids to be involved and not be those behind closed doors screen time kids. And you've brought in some great examples this year of some kids that are outgoing and just amazing kids.
Yeah, there's the basic research is out there, Phil, that basically states that if a kid is involved, they do much better in their academics. And that doesn't mean involved academically always. It could mean that they're involved in FFA, in a leadership opportunity. Maybe they're on the trap team. Maybe they're really good at shooting. Maybe they're really good at making sure that the fields are planted on time. And so they want to do an independent project on crops. It doesn't matter how they're involved. It matters that they are involved. So we try to offer kids so many diverse opportunities, everything from film study to agriculture, to trap shooting, to soccer, to football, to baseball, to softball, you know, all the different things to keep kids engaged at school. Because again, if they're engaged, they academically do better and they learn more. And that's ultimately our goal, is to make sure that they're all learning and getting ready for community and career readiness.
Spring sports underway and lots of competitions, you know, solo ensembles and FFA.
Absolutely.
Judging and things going pretty well this spring, are they?
Yeah, they really are. We're really excited because we had a project that started quite a bit ago, but we had to redo the drainage back by our softball and baseball fields. River Valley's campus in general is wet, right? The whole town of Spring Green is in a floodplain. Not the whole town, but a lot of the town is in a floodplain there. So we want to be really careful. And we wanted to drain some stuff back there better so that when you're playing softball, you're not sinking in, right? So yeah, we just did a drainage project back by baseball and softball fields, and they're looking great. We've really done some improvements back there, so excited to share those. But yeah, state solo and ensemble, high school and middle school, track and field, softball, baseball, girls soccer, golf, all the great competitions that happen out there for FFA or for youth apprenticeship or for Project Lead the Way or all the different things for welding competitions that are coming up. All of these great things are coming up this spring, and it's going to be a very fast finish, I guess I would say. The last day of school for River Valley is May 23rd. We're done early this year. And so that was a plan that we had to start early and end early so that we had a nice long summer break. And we're excited about that. But we really have 7 weeks of school left at River Valley.
Wow.
And that's a lot to get done in 7 weeks. So, yes, there's fun stuff happening outside, but inside the walls, there's a lot of academics that still has to get accomplished.
And what about the start for next school year? Is that going to be early again?
Or it is not. So the state didn't allow a lot of districts to jump in early this following year. So we are starting after September 1st as directed by state statute. It was this last year, they gave us a lot of flexibility. It was still, I think, a reflection or a reaction to COVID that they were giving a lot of districts some flexibility. So there were about, 50 districts that jumped in and said, hey, we'd love to start a little bit early. It'd be nice to get into the school early and get out a little bit early. And we were granted that permission, so we did that. So we will be done early, but this next following year, we're starting just the same as everybody else a little bit later after the 1st of September. So there will be a solid 3 months of summer for these kids. And we're excited for the teachers and for the kids to have a wonderful summer break.
All right. We'll have more from Lauren Glassbrenner, District Administrator of River Valley, when the morning show continues. Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley Schools, is our guest here on today's morning show on a Monday as we kick off a week with lots of great subjects and guests in the studio, and Lauren making his monthly visit here. You were recently out and about the School of Education with the conference there, and I saw that you attended that.
Yeah, there was a rural research symposium over at University of Wisconsin-Platteville, which has done a really good job of bringing in some speakers that speak to rural education. And the topic that evening was really around the data of people leaving the rural areas. And what happens, and this is a large generalization, but you can look at everything by age, really, in the rural demographic, which Richland Center, Ithaca, River Valley, you know, Plain, Arena, Lone Rock, all of us in those proper communities, we do have a lot of kids that do leave. Between the ages of 20 and 30, they migrate away. But when they want to come back is when they have their kids now. And so they're wanting to come back at around age 35. And so the symposium was looking at the migration of the youth. I guess I'll call them youth because they're much younger than me. 20s and 30-year-olds, they're leaving their hometowns. But by the time they hit 30 to 35, they're wanting to come back within a short distance of their hometowns to live. And that's where we're having this housing crisis where so many people are staying in their homes that there's no homes for them to come back to. So that was a large part of the symposium is this, we call it the brain drain when they leave. And really, it's not about the draining of it. It's about they want to come back and there's nowhere for them to reside. So that was a large part of the symposium. Also, a part of that night at UW-Platteville is kids that are in the field of education get to go around and speak with superintendents and district officials and kind of hear about the openings that are available out there for school district vacancies. So I was there touting. I've got a couple Phi-Ed openings. I've got a high school math opening. We've got a speech and language opening, and we have an elementary school opening. So again, River Valley is always wanting to try to hire the best and the brightest of any field. And so I was there speaking about the great things that are happening in the Valley and trying to find future candidates and people to be on our team.
So it was a bit of a job fair as well to try and lure some people to the district.
Absolutely. Yep. And a lot of the kids coming out of UW-Platteville very much want to be in a rural district. So it's a really nice job fair because they're not expecting to go in and be a part of a Madison climate. They want to very much be a part of a rural school district. So I find it to be a really nice job fair. And it's a good research symposium at the same time. So it was a nice day. It was during spring break for everybody else. So it gave me a chance to fly over to Platteville and spend the day. And it was a really nice day.
Have you seen numbers about number of students going into education? Has that changed or improved?
It depends on the field in which they're going. So I guess I'll go based on a vacancy. In a vacancy, let's say it's elementary education. We used to be able to put out an elementary education vacancy and have about 100 people apply. Now those numbers are at least in half, if not even 25% of that. So I'm always excited if I can find 25 applicants to apply for an elementary job. This last year in Phi Ed, physical education at River Valley High School, we couldn't find a teacher to fill that job vacancy. There are so few people going into certain specified fields that it's really hard to fill them. And so some of those high need areas are physical education and health. Agriculture is really hard to fill. Science is hard to fill. Higher level math courses, to find teachers for those are hard to fill. So it just depends on what field of study that a teacher applicant is digging into. But certain ones are really hard to fill, and it's getting harder and harder for districts to complete that whole process during the summer to make sure that every classroom has that qualified educator in it when the kids come busting back in September.
And we don't see the teachers staying, until they retire, like their only job, as much as we used to. Right?
Correct. That is correct. And you see teachers that if you can get a new teacher in and care for them well, if they can make it through the first 5 years, statistically, we know they're going to be a teacher. But if they don't get that solid start, they're going to kind of drift away from education pretty quickly. So somebody that comes into education and tries it on and then looks at it and goes, whew, this is way harder than I thought, they usually drift away pretty fast. So those first 3 to 5 years are really crucial for a young educator in their profession. So we want to make sure every new teacher gets brought in and gets well taken care of so that they want to be in the field of education, because it's a calling. We love what we do in education. We love helping the kids grow and get ready for their next steps, but it's a calling. It's not easy. For sure, it's not easy. And if I have to go to a state school, which there was just stats out on the rising costs of going to the UW, if I have to take out $50,000+ worth of loans to come out of school to make $40,000, a lot of young kids look at that as a losing venture. So they really have to think wisely and carefully about what they're investing in their education to make sure they're coming out on the plus side. So we're doing our very best to help kids find the best path, but we're also, once we get a new teacher in, we're really trying to take care of them so that they can stick with it and really prove to put their years in for that career.
Gone are the days where you look at filling those posts in the summertime. I mean, anymore, I think you got to strike pretty quickly, don't you?
You do have to strike quickly. So the vacancies that I'm finding, we are trying to interview for those jobs very quickly so that we can get them in, get them signed, make sure that they're ready to go. But another problem that we have in the rural schools is once they sign on the dotted line, some of them will call us back in a month and say, oh, I got a better job somewhere else, and they're going to give me a little bit more money. And so they come and they pay their fine and off they go. And then the vacancies open again. And in one circumstance last year, we had a job that opened 3 times where we hired 3 different people for that one certain job. And it just transitioned. Somebody hired, we signed them on the line. They accepted the job. You start working with them. They get another job. They leave. You put it back out there. You get another person. You sign them on the line. They're in. We're excited to have them. They left. We got another person in. So it's not hiring one. In an economy where so many people are so mobile, people move and go so quickly that sometimes these jobs transition multiple times in one summer. So it's a lot of hiring and a lot of HR stuff. But again, you do it for the kids and you do your best and try to find the right person for the job.
It sort of reminds me of the way college sports have gone, like a transfer portal or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So. Well, and there's so many things that have changed in education. Again, I've talked about the history of education, but there's so many mandates that come along with education nowadays, whether it's curricular standards or social service needs, whether it's the needs of an English language learner or standardized testing, which is out in every district probably this week and next week. Everybody's taking the forward exam or the pre-ACT. So there's all these standardized testing things that come forward. There's teacher certification changes, financial literacy changes. As I talked before, ADA design and requirements there. There's so many things that are required of public schools. We just have to be ready to go. We have to be ready to go with the punches so that we're ready and flexible to transition on a dime. And I think that's what I hope the public hears more than anything, is that education is not the same as it was, and that we are ready and willing to change with the future, but we just need you to be highly educated as our public to understand many changes have happened and will continue to happen. And we're just going to go with it to the best of our ability.
Lots to be proud of. Your FFA students were here not too long ago, and the strong chapter there, and I'm always impressed with what they're doing, too.
Yeah, we've got incredible teams, whether it's the fine arts. So I always tout the 4A's in the Valley. We've got strong academics, we've got strong agriculture education, we've got strong arts education, and we have strong athletics. We've got high engagement in all four of those areas, so lots to be proud of. We're very, very lucky. Things are going to fly. Like I said before, May 15th, which is it's a little over a month away, that's going to be scholarship night. Hmm. And from scholarship night on the 23rd is our students' last day, and then we have graduation on the 25th. So it's all going to fly. We're again, only 7 weeks away from graduation in Valley, and those things are going to just happen so quickly that I just want everybody to smile and be ready for the great ride that they're about to jump on.
Indeed. So where do you go from here then? Is it in the hands of the school board? River Valley about referendums and possibilities and surveys and things like that?
Absolutely. So there will be a survey coming out to the public. And again, I want the public to make sure they stay engaged, because we're only as good as the public impression out there. So we want to make sure that they give us their honest feedback. So there will be a survey coming back out to our voters that asks them about, where do you live? But also, can you give us reasons why you voted yes or no? And then tell us what we should be doing differently. It's not going to be a complicated survey, but it's really going to be around that idea of, did we ask the wrong questions? Did we ask for too much? Did we ask at the wrong time? Those kind of things. So we will have a survey coming out. This Thursday, we'll be having that conversation as a school board. And from there on, we'll decide what comes next. I'm proud and happy to work in the River Valley School District. I will continue to be there and work really hard. But again, we've got to figure out where we go next, because the needs that are truly there are not going to go away. They don't vanish. There are huge needs there. And so some of that remodeling and renovation just has to continue to be looked at.
Would it be possibly later this year for another referendum, or not until next year?
Not until next year. Mm-hmm. It is a state statute that a district can only ask two questions per year.
Okay.
So we just asked two questions. So for the year proper of 2024, we're done. Right. But as it flips over to 2025, then we can reconsider and pose more questions for our public.
Well, we hope people, if they have questions in the district, that they come forward, and you'd be glad to talk to them.
Absolutely. Come on over for a cup of coffee. I'd be happy to sit with them.
Always good stuff, Lauren. We appreciate you coming in.
Thanks so much, Phil.
You bet. We'll see you next month then. And we'll be even closer to that high school graduation and all that stuff.
So. Absolutely. It's going to be great. And I hope I will have some announcements about some of those senior scholarships that night, too. So I'll be able to talk about some of the great things that are being awarded to the students of River Valley as they venture off on their next steps.
I'm always impressed, too, at the amount of money that is available to those students. And it's so great because those awards nights are just astonishing.
Yeah, the River Valley High School team does an incredible job on our scholarship awards night. So it's a really fun community affair. And again, we want every kid, whether they're going off into the trades or going off to college, to have the same celebration for their wonderful skills. So we try to celebrate everybody here at the end of the year, especially our seniors venturing off into the world. And like I said before, many of them will come right back.
Indeed. Well, enjoy the spring.
Thank you, Phil.
We'll see you soon. Lauren Glassbrenner, District Administrator of River Valley, on today's morning show.